just deal.
I think that probably when the defunding of consumer protection came about, they transferred it over there, as I recall. I don't know. Maybe it'll come out in the testimony.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. What about the fact that real estate agents sell multifamily dwellings, so thereby they're selling to somebody who's going to become a landlord? I mean, doesn't that fall under the purview? Not say that, I'm not sure.
Just as a clarification, if I may, Mr.
Represent
Chairman, the landlord-tenant handbook is primarily a handbook to aid tenants primarily with their rights regarding any potential evictions.
Sure.
So
It's a very valid
no, it's
publication.
very good.
There's no question about that. I think Senator Representative Bryce's point may be well taken if we can find somebody to take it. But the
Well,
point
how
is
about the
that,
court system?
well, it should be the courts are who's responsible for publishing the law. I mean, that's an issue. But I mean, clearly, I don't think a case can be made that there should be some kind of a penalty on licensees for paying for it. I mean, that's my point. It's not a big issue, but it's kind of a matter of principle, I think. At any rate, I don't want to take any more time. I'm going to take some testimony and get you guys out of here. If anybody's left out there on the line, Eric, Mr. Drew, are you still hanging with us? Mr. Drew, sir, please identify yourself and your position for the record, sir. And thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you. My name is Eric Giroud. I'm the co-chair of the Anchorage Board of Realtors Legislative Committee. And I just had a couple of quick comments on the proposed bill, House 143, particularly regarding Section 08-88.450 on the Real Estate Surety Fund on page 2. And in particular, this portion directs that the surety fund be established in the general fund. And I think as we've discussed previously, the licensees, or at least legislative committee, would like to see the surety fund in an interest-bearing fund where the interest accrued to the benefit of the licensees to pay into it.
Right, Mr. Jude. On that point, we will take a look at that. I think there's going to be restrictions based on the appearance of a dedicated fund situation if we did something like that. But we can take a look at that and see what could happen if we could have a separate fund that's not in the general fund. I'm not sure that how that works, but we can look at that. Please continue your testimony, sir.
Because there's probably about $15,000 to $20,000 a year that could be gained in interest that could be used to reduce the contributions on behalf of the various members who pay their fees in. And just as a point of aside, when you were talking about the landlord tenant publication,
yes, sir.
I'm not sure that should be paid out of the surety fund, but it certainly is a useful book, and it's used in the industry as well with tenants. I wouldn't necessarily call it just a pro-tenant or anything. So it is used in the courses that are taught and dealing with property management with rentals. I probably grab that once, well, not once a month anymore, but maybe once a quarter. And a lot of the tenants ask for it, and I give them copies of it. So that's all I have, and I thank you for your time.
Now, Mr. Drew, do you think that the real estate licensee should pay for the landlord-tenant book?
We had our choice, no?
Very good, Eric. We got a quick hearing today. I just wanted to get the bill introduced and circulated in the industry. We'll wait for some further impact and input. Could you,
miss?
Okay, very good. Is there anybody else in Anchorage that wants to testify on House Bill 143?
No one here.
Very good. Is Matt Sue still on?
Yes, we are.
Suzanne, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir.
And could you give us your name and your affiliation and your testimony? And thanks for your patience.
Yes, I'm Suzanne Manico. I'm with WASP, We Against Sexual Predators. And I'm opposed to this bill because it removes the responsibility of realtors to notify potential buyers, sellers of a sex offender in the area. I recently put my home on the market with Ron Zamuda of RE/MAX, and I have no problem disclosing the sex with the disclosure of this. Part of protecting our children is being aware of our environment and our surroundings. And I feel like our state does so little to protect our children from these sex offenders and repeat sex offenders. By removing this bill, this from the bill, here we are again taking away from our children. And I just think it's the wrong thing to do. And if you're concerned about the sex offender registration not being accurate, then you need to find some more financing to put more people out there to make these sex offenders comply with the laws that we do have. I think this is a poor thing to do to our children. Thank you.
Well, Ms. Macko, just for your information, it is not the duty of a real estate agent to disclose a sex offender, and that's the nature of this bill.
Correct. But on the form that I received from my realtor, it did give a website access for people, and I would hate to see that even disappear.
Oh, no. That was just enacted last year.
Right.
This is just,
isn't this bill to remove the responsibility of the realtor in giving notice of sex offenders?
Well, the realtor does not have the responsibility now. This is just to clarify that. There's no duty or responsibility of the real estate agent to notify. That's the point.
That is the point.
Right.
Well, I guess I did misunderstand this, correct?
That's right, ma'am. And I just want to clarify that with you. I mean, that's the issue. Should or should not the real estate agent have the responsibility?
I definitely believe that they should.
They can't, because they sometimes get into what's called dual agency. So you have a duty to two people, one the buyer and one the seller, potentially, after it's fully disclosed, and therefore you're in an impossible situation. That's why it's a matter of technicality within the law. And it's really not the responsibility. The realtor can disclose that information if he so desires, but he shouldn't have a duty to do so, particularly if he finds himself in a position where whatever he would do would be basically illegal. That's the dilemma we're in.
Well, my understanding is that the realtor has the duty to disclose potential health hazards when buying a home, and you don't consider this a health hazard to children?
There is a duty to disclose, and as I say, if the real estate agent is aware of a defect in a home, yes, there is. And there's also a further duty if he's got a level of professional expertise to be aware of certain things, right? But there to impose a further duty to identify sex offenders, I think, goes beyond the responsibility. But it's really we have a technical problem in the law because of the duties of a agent to the various people in a transaction that he finds himself into a legal box that he can't get out of without some legislative relief. This in no way is intended to diminish the importance of the sexual registry, but it's, you know, it also is also intended to tell the public that the real estate agents are not the sex offender police either. That's the duty of law enforcement and of government and everybody involved with knowledge of the sexual registry. So to suggest that the real estate agent has a special duty is not, I don't think that's fair. And that's really the point of the bill. I authored the provision on the disclosure last year to help the public make sure they knew that the registry existed and that there is become knowledgeable about that. It's kind of hard to explain the technical details why we need this kind of legislation, but I think it's a good case can be made, and it certainly isn't meant to diminish the amount of notice and awareness of a potential sex offender to the children of our state. That's certainly not the intention.
But you're saying it's just not the way to do it.
No, it's really a legal, technical problem we find ourselves in to try to impose a duty. And that's the reason for the bill. It's not that a agent can't disclose it. He can if he so desires. But once he does that, then he's got a duty and responsibility to one of the individuals as part of a transaction. It gets kind of technical to explain. But and sometimes that relationship changes, so he finds himself in a dilemma where you have a duty to two masters, and that's what the problem becomes. Representative Bryce.
And here's where, and thank you, ma'am, for your input. Here's the way it happens, though. They don't disclaim, but they do ask that the person buying the property sign a piece of paper notifying, it's signifying that this information had been presented, that they've been made aware that while the current situation is that they signed the paper saying that the real estate agent has disclaimed any knowledge of any sexual offenders in the area. And if you're interested in going and finding out if there are any registered sex offenders in the community, here's where to go to look. That's the way it currently is. They don't necessarily have to do it. I think that that's appropriate. I think with this provision, Mr. Chair, that they will not be required to make that information available to the purchaser. And so I think the lady testifying does have a valid point in that I think that's an important service that the realtor provides the consumer. When you're buying a $100,000 piece of property, you know, which is small these days, I think that's a legitimate piece of information to put forth.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ms. Manico, for your testimony. I appreciate that. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify in House Bill 143? Ms. Reardon, please come forward briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Catherine Reardon, Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. I know that the hour is late and you have expressed the intent, Mr. Chair, to hold this over, so you can kind of tell me if you want to hear from me today or another day.
Why don't we, it's getting late, maybe a couple questions, and if we have any questions, for example, this interest-bearing fund, and could you look into if that was feasible in any way, or we can make adjustments there?
Mr. Chair, I definitely will look into it again so I can give you a definitive answer. I have asked this question before myself. I believe that it can be in the general fund and still be an interest-bearing account if the statute says it's going to earn interest. Mm-hmm. I believe there may be some other types of funds that I could find the statutory language from. I think it just needs. I don't think you have to necessarily remove it from the general fund, which I think might create some constitutional problems for
right,
you.
Exactly.
So it's possible that it could be interest bearing. I don't know how the Treasury or the folks you have to manage that would feel about. I don't know if there's extra work involved in interest bearing accounts or anything, but we could certainly ask them, and I'll bring back some more information on that at a later meeting if you'd like.
Yeah, could you find out about the landlord tenant booklet when the commission got that responsibility and why and so forth?
Mr. Chair, certainly I can find out when we first started printing it. It's not an actual regulatory or statutorily assigned responsibility. It's something that we've chosen to do. I'll find out when that first began. one comment I want to make, perhaps this will be undercutting my own support of the document, which is a very popular government publication, I would tell you. We get a lot of requests for it. There are a lot of agencies that request them so they can further distribute them. And does seem to be helpful to people. The bill, as I understand it, wouldn't prevent or stop the commission or the division from publishing the document. It would simply say that a publication that is primarily tenant and not equally landlord-oriented can't be published to the surety fund. And I would maintain that we try to publish a very impartial, unbiased item right now, which I would argue might very well satisfy your bill, because I don't view it as primarily tenant. But even if, you know, I wouldn't want to fight you guys on the issue if you felt that way about it, but even so, it still looks to me like it would be an option to be publishing it out of the general fund real estate funding source. And so if you really don't want that published, we probably need to be real clear about that, or else you might just get frustrated to find we're still doing it.
it's not a big amount, but it's kind of a personal thing. I mean, should the real estate licensees be paying for that particular thing? I think it came from the Consumer Protection Division. It was disbanded.
Mr. Chair.
The Department of Law, and I think that's where it came from. And there was they tried to find a place to put it, but how come the licensees all of a sudden are actually putting the bill for it?
I suspect there are a couple reasons, although I know you want me to go on at length here. One is we get a lot of calls into the real estate office asking what are really landlord-tenant issues. And one of the easiest, you know, you get consumer calls, even if it's your bailiwick to resolve them, which it's not. We don't investigate. They aren't part of the real estate law. It's nice, rather than just telling these members of the public who are calling, go away, it's not our problem, to say, look, we'll send you this, and you can, you know, look into it yourself and go off. That's one thing that's been useful about having the publication. Otherwise, you just have a lot of frustrated public. The other thing is that, as I understand it, property managers who are licensees are in the business of collecting rent and hopefully keeping it in escrow accounts, deposits, things like that. So there are licensees who are involved in dealing with tenants, and we want them to know how to deal with them legally. But the commission is meeting tomorrow and the next day, and I will bring these questions and concerns to them, or Grace will, so that we can get some feedback.
The other thing is the outsourcing of the surety fund hearings and counsel. The bill is not entirely clear, but it's my intention to even hire other counsel besides the Department of Law for the surety fund hearings.
And Mr. Chair, on that point, this is helpful for me to understand, you know, what the goal was. In terms of surety fund hearings, the commission is just the judge. In disciplinary actions against real estate licensees, the division is actually preparing the case, acting as the prosecution. And so we're hiring the prosecution lawyer, basically the Department of Law. But in surety fund, that's not the case. We're not actually paying a lawyer. We're paying for the hearing officer. We're not paying for the Department of Law, because in surety fund proceedings, the member of the public who feels like they were injured comes in and presents their own case. We don't investigate for them. We don't argue their case for them. And the accused person comes and argues their case. The state role is to first, through the hearing officer, make a proposed decision and have the commission accept it or not. So we're not actually, in this particular setting, paying the Department of Law. Perhaps if the commission were to get sued or something as a result of a surety fund hearing, we'd be paying the Department of Law. But we're not actually paying the way we are when we're doing a disciplinary proceeding ourselves.
Okay.
I know that's confusing. That's why we also don't really have investigative costs, because we don't do the investigation. Just touching a couple other issues you may want to ask more about another day. I very much appreciate the removal of the threat that when we don't spend enough money and the balance goes over $500,000, that the licensees who paid it will lose it, because I think that spending less money is a good thing, and there shouldn't be this inherent pressure to make sure you spend so you don't go over $500,000, which, to tell you the truth, is a little bit the situation I'm in this year. I'm going to hit real close, and I don't want to go over. because we've had a very low expenditure year. But I would ask, from a technical point of view, since the law says we can't go over $500,000, what happens if we do? I just don't know.
I would suggest the director be thrown in jail.
Thank you for that.
Isn't that the, thank you, Mr. Chair, isn't the desire to, in the bill, to create an average over 2 years? Because you have 1 year the fees are higher and the next year they shrink, while in some cases your educational expense and expenses stay consistent. So by the provision of allowing the fund to be based, the average balance, daily balance as banks call it, based on a 2 year, then you wouldn't lose that, because you, even though 1 year you might be at 520, the next year you might be at 380 or whatever.
Through the chair, Representative, that would be wonderful. A two-year, you can't go over $500,000 at the end of any two-year period, or at the end of the two-year license period, would be great. I didn't actually see the two-year, and that was the next thing I was going to ask for. And maybe I was misreading it. Looking at page 2, line 12, is where it talks about the $500,000, but I think something like that would be very helpful, because it's exactly the problem we've got. We fill it all up in 1 year. It's hard not to go over 4 months later $500,000. But you got to be high enough that you can make it through the entire next year. So that would be helpful. One thing I wanted to say, I feel that the chair has been very supportive and constructive in working with the division and the real estate commission. But just for the rest of you, I did want you to know that use of the surety fund for educational purposes and paying for a staff position, which is absolutely true, is specifically authorized in the budget each year. So just in case someone might be thinking that we had this fund and we're just paying for staff with it to help balance my budget, it is something that's specifically listed that position will be funded that way, and here's how much we can spend on education in the budget each year. We're not using it as a slush fund. It's appropriated. So if you don't want us to spend the money that way, you just need to take out the budget. As much as I don't want you to do that, we are following our budgetary guidelines.
Well, on that point, I don't understand its fiscal impact. I mean, this should have a zero fiscal impact, because I wanted to correct the this should only be on the new biennial cycle starting next January. And,
Mr. Chair, what I intended to be showing was although this is my instruction, but I may not have read it carefully, was that we were going to spend $104,000 less out of the surety fund and $104,000 more out of general fund program receipts for a net wash. If it doesn't look like that, it's an error. That's all I can say.
New operating expenditures and new fund source, so it doesn't.
There's no offsetting reduction. I will go back and look at that. That is absolutely what I intended to have happen, and that's why the second paragraph of the analysis there says it's a funding source change. We were not asking for more overall money, and I will go through this and for the next meeting make sure that's very clear. We were following your expressed intent that maybe operating budget or general fund activity should go out of the general fund, and so we were just moving it across. But
I was saying, unless we need to change the bill, I mean, it should be pretty seamless, but it just has to be done, because isn't next January 2000 when the next cycle starts?
Yes, it does.
So that's why we need to accommodate that. That's why this bill needs to pass this year. It's going to pass.
I will look at this.
I might have to remove some stuff from it to make sure it passes, though.
We were just meaning to show an equal shifting of money from one funding source to another, not an actual increment. I will make sure that that's how it looks.
Well, it may be a defect in the legislation here, so let us know how that works.
I didn't think so.
How's the hiring going? Have we got a freeze still on?
You might be happy to know, Mr. Chair, that the Commissioner's Office did sign the request to hire memos today.
Okay.
And we can talk about that if you'd like to. The other item for another day is has to do with the change of the title of Executive Secretary on the first page of the bill. My understanding from talking to your staff earlier was that was not intended to trigger a change in pay,
right,
or a change in the person's duties. And I may be suggesting at the next meeting that perhaps you leave the title executive secretary, but add a sentence saying who will use the working title executive director. Otherwise, it may unintentionally trigger job classification changes and pay range changes.
Good. I appreciate that comment. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Reardon, for coming today, and we'll be working further on this legislation. If you could pass on to the bill to the commission, and I'd appreciate all their input on it.
Yes.
Any other additions, corrections, or so forth? I appreciate that.
Thank you.
With that, thank you very much. And the Liberal Conference hearing is adjourned at 5:35.
Do I hear this again?